Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Even more so with us not having any wingers, because he can be deployed on that right hand side, and Goodmanson's only ever one game off being fucking injured. So yeah, I do like Brownhill.
Please don't ever hesitate to swear on this pod, just go.
Hello everybody, and welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name's Serge.
And my name is James.
And we're on to episode 4, James, of Correspondent Week, day 2. Who do we have now?
I'm going to introduce Jack while my child is screaming in the background, but don't worry, I do assure you it's no child cruelty going on here. The wife is looking after him. Let me introduce you to Jack Toner, our Burnley correspondent. How are you, Jack?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
I'm going to mute, Serge, right? You crack on.
I was going to say, you're looking forward to the season ahead. Where do you kind of stand on how you finished and what have you?
Was a bit of a funny one last season, as it was for a number of teams, really. We was heavily affected by injuries early on last season, which was mainly to our defence, which, you know, we had a real shocking start to the season. Got back to basics, you know, had a stronger finish to the season. Chris Wood being one of the ones that managed to hit a bit of form. So overall, you know, it's for a team like us that, you know, we'd spent £1 million last season. It's not really, you know, you're happy if you're, as long as you're not in the bottom three, to be honest. So yeah, it was an up and down season, but, you know, luckily we wasn't really in too much of a relegation battle. We were sort of safe, you know, 4 or 5 games to go. So I would have taken that at the start of the season.
And I do remember talking to James and thinking about the Burnley defence from an FPL point of view, and just waiting for Ben Mee to get fit again, because no one felt comfortable investing in your defence without him.
Yeah, he's one of those. He's individually, he's not necessarily, you know, one for the FPL. You know, he's not as much of an asset as, you know, potentially Charlie Taylor or Matthew Loughton. But in terms of once he's in the side, you know, it made a massive difference as soon as he came back into that team. But we have signed a replacement. No, we're not a replacement. You know, some more cover in Nathan Collins from Stoke. So hopefully that will give us a little bit of cover. So if there was to be a knock to someone like me or Tarkowski, then we've got a more reliable, you know, centre half that can step up rather than just Kevin Long, or obviously now Jimmy Dunn's been sold. So a little bit more consistency, hopefully.
Is he competition, Jack, or backup?
It'll be worded that he's competition, but we signed Gibson. He was our record signing for £50 million. He didn't get a sniff. So I don't see any of those two losing the spot unless, you know, if there was an injury, then it would be interesting to see, because I think that's all, you know, Gibson really missed out on. If at one point there would have been an injury to me or Tarkowski and Gibson got his chance, I think there would have been a real chance that he could have nailed that spot down. That being said, I think at this stage now we've had Tarkowski and me for that long, Dyche is going to be very reluctant to, you know, to leave Collins in there if one was injured. But the Tarkowski situation's a funny one. He's out of contract at the end of the season, so whether we accept an offer for him before the start of the season or January, you know, but if he's not signed come January, we're going to start him to be, you know, whether he turns around and doesn't put the same effort into performances, you know, doesn't want to get injured, that, you know, those sorts of things creep in. So, yeah, Collins is a very good backup to have, but I think he is just that. I don't think he's necessarily competition.
I think with Tarkowski, I mean, obviously, West Ham and a number of clubs were circling around him last season and probably was priced out of a move by Burnley, because I think you were looking for £30 million plus.
Yeah.
With the change in ownership, and we can talk about that a bit later, but in terms of how they're looking at data and AI and all that kind of thing, if his contract is up at the end of next summer and a bid does come in that they think, you know what, financially we need to take it, do you think there's still a chance that he could then be gone before the end. It feels like this is the summer of centre backs because people just seem to be dying. Defenders are real.
I think it's a real funny one. I think from my personal point of view, I'd much rather, I mean, even if it was only 15 million, we've been there before when Danny Ings was here, as much as he was a good player. And he put, you know, for the first half of the season, he was superb. The second half of the season, performance levels dropped off. You know, his heart wasn't in it the same. He was just dying that move to Liverpool. So if we had a bid of 50 million plus, I'd be tempted to say, let's take it and go for someone, you know, like Nat Phillips or, you know, just explore other options because I think we need to be looking longer term. Tarkowski came out at the start of last season and publicly said he doesn't see the situation changing. He was honest and he just said he doesn't see himself signing a new contract. But obviously, things was changed. So I think the only thing that would really change his mind was if the new board came in and turned around and said, "Here's a wad of money." But even still, I think he's chasing his. You know, he's got his eyes on the England team, and he's just not getting the recognition that he deserves whilst he's here. So it's a funny one, but yeah, I'd personally welcome a bid as long as something was. You know, we invested that in the rest of the squad, but it wouldn't go down well with the fans because we just haven't invested in other areas of the pitch.
Yep.
The thing is, you could gamble and sell him. Well, I'd say gamble. I completely get where you're at, Jack, in terms of take some money. But if you stay up, he's worth keeping him, isn't it?
Yeah. But obviously, I'm just thinking from, you know, if we can have, you know, Nat Phillips and Collins as, you know, two centre-halves, you'd think between those two and Ben Mee, there should be enough there to, you know, to have a steady defence. But yeah, I completely get your point that, you know, he's the old reliable. He knows the team. He knows how Daesh plays. My only worry is that, you know, he gets a few niggles and he starts to miss out on games. And is it that he's just, you know, shield himself a little bit? You know, he turned around in his interview and said, he's a Burnley player and that's not the case, but you just never know when it comes to.
He's straight batted it, isn't he?
Yeah.
If a good offer comes in, he's going to go.
Yeah.
From what you're saying.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Nick Pope going to be fit for game week one?
Daesh has refused to comment. Ooh. He said he's getting there. He said he's, you know, I don't think he's a million miles away. But I personally think it'll be Hennessy starting the season because we yet to see him in a pre-season game. So he's still recovering from his knee operation. I personally don't see Daesh rushing him for it being the start of the season. I think he'll give Hennessy the nod and Pope will come back in as and when. But if we was due to play Notts Forest this weekend, but that's been postponed. We're now playing Tranmere due to COVID outbreak at Nottingham. So it'd be interesting to see if Pope's available for selection on that day. I think if not, then if he doesn't play this weekend, I think it's starting to look like it might be a bit, you know, too much too soon. Yeah.
This is where I have to do the bit, Serge, that I forgot. This podcast is being pre-recorded on Thursday, July 29th. Jack is referring to a weekend that's probably gone, so we might have some extra information. Do you think, Jack, Hennessy was obviously signed on a free after release at Palace. Do you think he was signed because his attributes are more similar to Pope as opposed to Norris and Peacock Farrell's gone on loan to Sheffield Wednesday? Is that the thinking, do you think?
I think it was part of the fact that the other two have been shite for us season. Yeah. I mean, I've got a mate who's a Palace fan and he can't stand Hennessy. He thinks he's one of the worst goalkeepers he's ever seen. But like you said, with his attributes, you know, his physicality, I think he is very similar. I'd expect us to get the best out of him with the way that our defence works. He's definitely a better option than Norris and Peacock Farrell's young. He's not really played all that much football. So I think the way we've got him in on loan, the way we've got him in on a free and we're sending Peacock Farrell out on loan just sort of makes sense. It's, you know, it's a much better setup to have of professional goalkeepers.
Yeah, agree. It didn't bode well for Peacock Farrell that he got obviously a chance at the end of the season that he was dropped, wasn't he? For Norris, because it's a big drop down from Nick Pope.
Yeah.
Let's be real about it.
Yeah. I mean, we spent £3.5 million on Peacock Farrell, which, you know, in Premier League terms isn't a lot, but, you know, considering that for us, it was sort of one for the future with him being so young. So for him to be dropped for Norris was a real kick in the teeth for Peacock Farrell. So I think whether we're trying to do that and get a fee for him and he's just really fallen down the pecking order, or whether it's just to send him out on loan and see, you know, how he performs, then I don't know. But I think Dash is probably much more confident with Hennessy there than Peacock Farrell.
You're not going to start with a Burnley defensive player, are you, in FPL?
Probably not. If I was, I'd be maybe tempted to go for Loughton. Our fixtures are all right. They're not too bad, but I think there's just a bit too much doubt there with being no Pope.
I think they're a bit grim, actually, mate, the fixtures. Thanks for answering the next question, by the way, Lowton or Taylor. Cheers, appreciate that. that saved me wasting my breath. I look at them fixtures and I think...
There are expensive Burnley defenders, if you look at it, 4.5s and 5s for
it's absolutely reasonable. Someone wants them in as 4 or 5th.
I was going to say the asterisk is without Pope. If Pope was in goal, I mean, Pope, looking at it again, managed to rack up, I mean, he's 5.5 million, but I don't think he's expensive because he racked up, what, another 144 points in the best part of 31 games or what have you. Just so reliable is Nick Pope, but
yeah,
I don't see it. I've always got a soft spot for Matt Lowton just because of the times I've owned him, he's always seemed to do well and came off the bench with that time that he scored his one and only goal probably for you guys in the Premier League.
Yeah.
And we get such bias from that, but... But I get what James is saying. Yeah, I can't see myself starting with any Burnley.
I'd be tempted to maybe move on Taylor, depending on how the season goes and how he starts. Because we've talked about him numerous times on here, and he's a good asset to have. But last season, his performance levels just wasn't quite there. So whether he comes back and has a good pre-season and feels refreshed, but you know, Loughton was for me the better of the two last season.
The Brighton game's got quite a bit of pressure on it. To kind of elaborate on my fixtures point, you look at the games afterwards, Liverpool, Leeds, Everton, Arsenal, Leicester takes you up to game week 7 at home to Norwich. And I've got question next to you for game week 7, question next to you for game week 9, 10, and then a big circle marked around you for game week 12. That's my thoughts on you at the moment. You've got a lovely little spell from game week 12 that begins with Palace at home, which is 5 home games in 8, and it's a good little run with no major sort of let's say big 4 opposition, because I can see
going to say one of them.
You know, Jack, I'm overlooking that, mate. But yeah, and I think the go tos are, I wouldn't say to anybody don't get Lowton or Taylor as 4.5s, but I don't think you're going to be starting them. I think you're going with these guys probably if you're on the strategy of thinking exactly what you always say to us, Jack. Those clean sheets will come when you least expect them. Get them in for their consistency. Don't worry too much about the fixtures. It's a long-term decision. No one's going Lowton or Taylor if they're thinking they're wild card in game week 4, for example. I don't see that choice.
Yeah. Yeah, there's not enough early decent fixtures. You know, like you said, you know, there can be, you know, the odd run against big teams where they can outperform what you'd expect. But yeah, for me, it's a risk. It's a risk without Pope anyway, so it probably wouldn't be one that I would take.
We talked about Tarkowski starting the season. What about midfield? Do you think McNeil will still be with you come Brighton?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's, I don't know how many years he's got left on his contract, but he's signed a new deal within the last couple of years, so he's well under contract. It would probably take 35, 40 plus for us to even
really consider that.
I think so. I think if someone came in with less than 30, we wouldn't really entertain it, because that would leave us with one professional winger, and that would be Goodmanson, and he's good for about 5 or 6 games a season with his injury record. So for us to then have to go and get a replacement as well, I don't think we'd really bother.
For 35, 40 million, you better go and play on the right, mate. There's been lots of Everton murmurs.
Yeah.
But I don't think it'll go to that sort of money. I don't think.
Not with, they've already signed a few, haven't they, as well, haven't they? They've obviously got Townsend in and Gray.
But yeah, I mean, I would say McNeil's better than both.
Yeah.
Younger than both as well, to be fair, but... if he was to go, I mean, even looking at him in there, midfield just feels a bit light. If you pick up an injury or two, then you're down to bare bones. I mean, Goodmanson's not got the best injury record over the last couple of seasons.
No.
So you're talking about Brownhill, Cork, McNeil, Westwood. There's nothing more beyond that, really, is there?
No.
Well, Robbie Brady gone?
Yeah, he went on a free. Let him go. Again, his injury record just, and I think he wanted too much, you know, in terms of wages. But since the Europa League season, when we'd signed Aaron Lennon, that season. We had Aaron Lennon, who we used as a winger, obviously. Hendrick and Brady. All three have gone and we haven't replaced any of them. So now the only two wingers we're actually left with is McNeil and Goodmanson. So for me, we need to get two wingers in before the start of the season. And we've not been linked with all that many. So it's getting a little bit squeaky bum time.
Now, you make a fair point, Suge, in terms of the depth of the squad. It does look a little thin, although I think if you're looking at FPL squads as I am, I mean, there's kids of yours that have been on the bench and are hardly played for, 18 months or so now. Some of them must be getting a bit close, no?
So the ones that were close, so obviously Kevin Long was the first choice centre-back once Gibson fucked off to Middlesbrough and then went on loan to Norwich. So the second centre-half reserve was Jimmy Dunn. He was out of contract. We offered him a new deal. He wanted to go and play first team football, so he's gone to QPR. So he was one of the young lads. The only other one who broke through was Benson in midfield. As of Thursday, sold him to Barnsley for an undisclosed fee. Mbungo was the other striker who sort of broke through. He's gone on loan to Accrington. So the ones that were closest, even those have sort of gone out. So you are sort of worrying and thinking, you know, when we have these cup games coming up, are we playing senior players and running them into the ground early on in the season? So, yeah, in terms of the squad, it is looking very light. We do need bodies in.
It makes me, before I want to talk about Josh Brownhill and the forwards, it makes me want to kind of interrupt and say, what's happening? You got took over a few months ago. Are they spending money or are they using you as an investment, mate?
There is always the worry that they are using as an investment. And obviously we have briefly touched on that. It was a leverage deal, a leverage takeover. So they've not dumped that much money up themselves initially. My concern with the initial takeover was that due to the loan they've taken out, we're paying between 10 and 11 million pounds a year in interest. So straight away, you know, considering that last season we spent 1 million pounds on Stevens, we're already 10 million pounds down before we've even bought anybody, you know, so that's a big worry. He's promised us that there's, you know, there is funds there to spend. Whether we're just leaving it last minute and trying to pick up a few bargains or whatever, but it's concerning when we've not at least got in. We got in Collins early, so with the centre half, that was done and dusted. That was nice. I would have liked to at least had another winger in by now, and obviously, hopefully, some more to come.
Have you heard any names mentioned?
There's been a few. So Cornet, we've been linked with Maitland-Niles today from Arsenal.
Central player, really, isn't he?
Yeah. There's been a few names dotted around and stuff, but nothing that I've thought there's been real. You know, I've never heard of like, oh, we've actually lodged a bid or we're, you know, wanting to talk to the player. Nothing more than just, you know, Alan Nixon rumours on Twitter, so to speak.
All right, let's talk about Josh Brownhill then. He's the best 4.5 million midfielder in the game, isn't he?
Yeah, he's definitely an asset. Even more so with us not having any wingers because he can be deployed on that right-hand side. And Goodmanson's only ever one game off being fucking injured. So, yeah, I do like Brownhill.
Please don't ever hesitate to swear on this pod. Just
my only concern is that, you know, Cork had a decent end to the season and I think Dyche does show faith to some of those sorts of players. So whether Goodmanson was fit, whether he would line up with a midfield of Westwood and Cork, McNeil on the left and Goodmanson on the right, potentially. So there is that worry. But yeah, he had a superb season last season, especially early on. Didn't really look out of depth, making the step up to the Premier League. And yeah, was definitely part of, you know, some of our success during the first half of the season.
What's the, if you've got Goodmanson and McNeil both available, and let's assume 4-4-2. Who's first choice centrally?
Definitely Westwood. I wouldn't really know between the other two. It would be a bit of a gamble. I'd be guessing. I'd be leaning towards Brownhill, but I wouldn't be surprised if he went for Cork.
Is Cork a little bit more disciplined defensively, would you say?
Yeah, he's just a little bit more physical. He reads the game defensively a lot better. He won't necessarily sit so deep, but he can be box to box and he's just a little bit more, you know, sort of aware of the game because he's obviously a bit older. I think he's one of those where he can be underappreciated. But yeah, Brownell going forward is definitely much better and more creative. It just sort of depends as to what system we're wanting to go with.
You know why I'm asking that question, don't you? Although he's going to be sitting second or third on everyone's bench, they still want the bastard to play, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there is a chance he'll play, especially, like you said, with us having, you know, next to no depth. There's going to be games early on in the season where I wouldn't be surprised if Cummins gets a knock. Brownell may well be in the starting 11 for the first, you know, at centre midfield, but Gudmundsson's only ever one game off being injured, so I wouldn't be surprised if he plays or comes on a sub or, you know, takes over from Gudmundsson.
In that case, it's Brownhill that will play on the right, isn't it?
Yeah, at this minute with nobody else.
The old Jeff Hendrick role. You said you haven't replaced him. Maybe you have.
It'd be Eric Peters. We'd literally play a left back there.
I forgot about him. You could, couldn't you? Because you'd rather play the experienced player, wouldn't he?
Yeah.
It's just how Dyche works.
Yeah. Personally, I wouldn't mind seeing someone like Rodriguez out wide. You know,
that's got to be a solution. Because actually, if they're all fit, you've got four decent forwards, haven't you? And Jay Rodriguez is the one who can go and play wide, I think, naturally.
Yeah, we didn't get enough out of him last season. We sort of saw Vidra come into the fold a little bit more, which was good. And for me, Vidra made us play a different style of football rather than just using the two big lads up front. But Rodriguez isn't shy about coming back and doing some defending. So, yeah, I'd be open to seeing him playing on the right-hand side. But towards the end of last season, when Brady was injured and we had a few injuries on that, it was literally Peters that was playing in that position whilst Rodriguez won the bench. So,
for the benefit of those on the audio, I put my hand up. What you want, Jack, is Rodriguez left and McNeil on the right.
Yeah, that's, we do, that, but that's not what you want. We also want signings, but let's be realistic here.
Yeah, I know a lot of people might not be starting with Burnley players, but I do think that Manchild will be starting with three because DJ Westwood goes in without a doubt. Good man's son's always in and around because he's a good man's son. And last but not least, Wood is always there for Manchild because anything that's...
He also likes Ben Mee. He's had Ben Mee before.
He has. Normally, he's trying to make a sentence out of the words. This is why he goes with me. But let's talk, Chris Wood, because this striker bracket has been hot conversation. Antonio Watkins, I don't know, reel them all off, Tony, Callum Wilson, all in and around. Wood's probably the least mentioned from that bracket, I would say.
He's probably not going to play in game week one.
Is that what we're thinking?
They've made the quarterfinals of the Olympics, haven't they?
Time of recording.
Right, okay.
The quarterfinals is the 31st. So if they progress to that, the semi-finals on the 3rd of August. And as soon as you get to the semi, with it being the Olympics, there'll be a third... Well, they'll play for bronze, basically. So even if he loses in the semi, there'll be another game, which will be after the 6th or the 7th of August.
Manchild's going to clip that.
My understanding is this is a good time to make a point because this would be very different for certain players. So take the case of Richarlison, who went and played in the Copa America and has now gone to the Olympics. He hasn't had a break. He hasn't stopped at all.
Yeah.
Now, FIFA laws are suggesting that you should have to have a 3-week break from the point that whenever his Olympic venture finishes. So technically, if Brazil made the final, Richarlison probably shouldn't be playing forever until game week 3 or possibly even game week 4. Now, in Chris Wood's case with New Zealand, what I don't know the answer to is, did he go and have a 3-4-week holiday, then go to the Olympics? Because if he did, in theory then, this is his pre-season and he could just come back and start playing.
Yeah, that's what Dyche said.
Yeah, you have to be conscious in terms of the story of where you're at with that. So, I mean, Richarlison for me would be, I think he's probably going to be forced to miss some time, whether Everton like it or not. But I think in Wood's case, he could possibly come straight back up. And because of the type of games he's playing in, he'd actually be possibly fitter than a lot of his teammates.
Yeah, so Dyche said that he'd spoken to him at the back end of last season. He said, you know, they drew up a plan and he said it fitted in with pre-season and it wasn't, you know, too much of, you know, it wasn't too much of a hindrance. Obviously, I'd imagine they'd want to get him back in and do, you know, some sort of like body mass tests and all that shite that they do. I don't see him rushing straight back in. I wouldn't be surprised if he missed the first game and then played the second or something, purely because, you know, up front's where we've actually got a bit of depth.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I, I'd be tempted to swerve him for especially game week one and just hold off and see. The last thing you want to be doing is forced into an early transfer when, you know, he's, and the other thing as well is the isolation period. So if he does make it to the, you know, the semis or the final, if he's got to isolate 10 days once he gets back, you know, imagine if the final's right. on the 6th, you know, if it's 10 days isolation from when he gets back, you know, our first game's on the 16th, so he physically wouldn't be able to make it anyway, even if, you know, unless I've missed something and that, you know, the government's decided that Sporting Stars are exempt from isolating or something.
I don't know. Are you aware of anything of that, Serge?
No. No, to be honest with you, I think it would depend as well if he's been double vaxxed, whether they recognise his vaccination and where he's coming from and all that kind of stuff. But the rules are changing quick, right? I think the next wave of rule change is August 16th, which is after the first weekend of fixtures. So, we shall see.
He feels like one, I think, that you can go back to, Chris Wood, rather than start with. That's how it feels to me. You could go.
There's always one that you've got to catch at the right time, is Chris Wood, isn't it?
The other problem you got is to say, like, Jimenez has got great fixtures from game week 4, and we don't kind of know what physical condition he's going to be in, but we get 3 games to have a look. Watkins to Jimenez in game week 3, game week 4, is the sort of move people will be looking at. I don't know actually where you go back to Wood. I think it's what I've said. He's probably later. It's game week 7 8. Or 9, 10 or 12. It's probably one of them to go.
Yeah.
From a forward perspective, at that price at 7 million, he's not a player you want to bench. I look at Man City away the following week in game week 8. He's probably waiting until game week 9 or so, I think, if you wanted to go down that route.
I think he causes you more problems than he solves problems. For me, you know, Vidra is not a bad option. He's just come back from, he obviously went with Czech Republic to the Euros. He's come back to training this week, so he might start the friendly at the weekend. He'd be a good option with how he finished the season. He's at 5.5, so maybe one to keep an eye on. But like you said, it's not, with our fixtures, it's not exactly ones that you'd be rushing to.
Which one do you think from them 3 5.5s? Obviously, Ashley Barnes is there as well. This time last year, there was a little bit of a Hindu monkey Twitter community Barnes train thing going on. Yep. No sign of that this year, obviously at a cheaper price. One of those 5.5s is surely going to start game week 1.
Yeah, it'll be 2 of them. I think it'll probably be Rodriguez and Barnes or Rodriguez and Vidra. Personally,
could be all 3 of them if Goodmanson gets injured between.
Yeah,
think about this, Jay. Last season, so you've got Barnes 52 points, Rodriguez 54. And Vidra 62. If that was just one player who racked up the best part of 160 points as the second Burnley striker, perfect. You just need to pick one second striker and let him play the whole season. And
that's not the case, though, is it? Because Chris Wood didn't play every game. Well,
but so, to be fair, he was 100 plus points, which wasn't 138 points. So between the Burnley strikers, you've got 280 points there.
And none of them are from subs because we didn't score a single goal from a substitute. So none of those are
good stats. To be fair, after time, don't make any, in fairness.
Yeah,
we have to have players to make the fucking subs, don't we? So,
yeah.
I think Wood's price at 7 million is reasonable. I started with him last year, in spite of the fact you had the blank in game week 1 and looked like a hero when he scored at Leicester after 10 minutes in game week 2. But he had to get shot because you weren't scoring goals, right?
Yeah.
If you had a good fixture list, I wouldn't have been put off by that, because I think a little bit like on the previous podcast with FPL footballer about Callum Wilson, he's going to be the man. There's not a debate about it. This time last year, there would have been some saying it's Wood, some saying it's Barnes. There isn't a debate that Chris Wood is Burnley's best striker. I think it's got to be fair, isn't it, Jack?
Yeah. Yeah, there'll be a moment this season, like last season, where he gets the hat-trick or, you know, has a brace or something. There will be a point in the season where he has a good run of form, where it's assists or, you know, or something. But that's the point as well. He brought assists into his game last season, which he sort of hasn't had in the previous, you know, couple of seasons. So, yeah, he's definitely the man to have. I just don't think for game week 1 he's one that you'd really consider, just because there's just too much that can go wrong. Even if he makes it back from, you know, from the Olympics, he's then got to isolate. You know, we know what Dash is like about putting players in when he's not had them training or, you know, seen them in pre-season. So, yeah, for me, definitely not early doors, but he'd be one to keep an eye on.
Have you got any in your... Have you done a draft so far?
About 2 days ago was my first one. I've left it up until now.
Any better players made it in or not yet?
I think I might have had one in, but I'm not too sure. I was playing around with it that much, and they've got so much going on, and I was like, no.
I think Brownhill's got to be close, hasn't he? I know it's been kind of on peace, if you will, because he scored a couple of goals in the friendlies and stuff. But you look around at them 4.5s, and it's a bit, we were saying this with Bradley, weren't we, about Morgan Gibbs-White. Like, if he does play, he's interested. But do you actually want to take that gamble? Bissouma's sitting there, and you know he's going to play, whether he's at Brighton or whether it's for someone else. Even with Brownhill, there is a small element of gamble. But I would think with him, something will happen, he'll end up being in the team, even if he doesn't necessarily start in game week one. So I think he's a reasonable shout. And I actually think one of those 5.5 million forwards for game week one is punty as a placeholder if you're struggling financially. I don't hate it. I can't see me going down that route. I think personally, if I'd not spoke to you, Jack, I'd have gone Rodriguez. I bet he's quite a good preseason, though.
Yeah, he scored a couple. Well, to be fair, as Brownhill scored a couple, I think he scored a brace in one of the games. I'd be thinking it'd be Rodriguez and Vidra, or Rodriguez and Bard. So I do think Rodriguez is the safest option, because I think it's a toss up between the other two. That's considering, you know, if so long as Wood doesn't make it, which I really don't think he does. So yeah, Rodriguez at 5.5 would be definitely, like you said, a decent punt to have in from the start.
Just a note as well, I was looking a bit further ahead in your fixtures, Jack. Bloody hell, mate. Game week 20 to game week 25. Someone's had a joke with you, haven't they? bloody hell. You got Man United twice. Leeds, Leicester, Arsenal and Liverpool. Someone's had a wind-up with you there. And I mentioned that is interesting because those who obviously hold the wild card late will be using it around that period, and that's going to be difficult to look at Burnley players then as well. I think it's somewhere in between 8-12 is the entry point for Burnley if you're looking. But I don't mind. If people are struggling for value, I think for me, Rodriguez at the start.
Yeah.
Brownhill is very competitive at 4.5. He's the most likely one for me. I think defensively with the start you've got, mate, and possibly no Nick Pope, it's a skip for me, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be rushing. There's no real bargain value in there. Like you said, the wing backs, if you've got a good run of fixture, are good ones to have in. But with the uncertainty of no Nick Pope, you know, we had a shaky start to last season defensively, but still chipped in with the odd goal. So I'd be more tempted to go midfield or forward over defender. Yeah, 100%.
This is going to be that podcast, Serge, that we record 5 days in advance. And by the time it drops, we find out that poor Matt Lowton ruptured his hamstring at the weekend.
Oh,
and we haven't mentioned 4.0 Phil Bardsley once.
No, but then we did talk about Manquillo with Sire earlier. So, you know, we've got a 4.5 in the conversation somewhere.
Would Bardsley still play if Lowton was out?
I didn't realise how little he played last season.
That's the same. I actually got 2 FPL points.
Yeah,
would he actually go Peters at right back?
No, I think it would be Bardsley. So he was injured. The only time when Peters played as an inverted right back was when Bardsley was injured. So we've just given Bardsley a new deal, even though he's like 46 years old.
I was going to say, it's got to be about that.
Yeah. So, but yeah, if there was an injury or not to Lowton, it would be Bardsley that played, yeah.
It's one of them no one mentioned at the moment, but one injury and it would be like, oh my God, Burnley 4.0 defender.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all well and good getting him in as fifth sub. I want to see the person with the cones to play him as well. As a 4.0 defender,
I don't suppose Phil Bardsley will be the next John Lundstrom.
No,
that's going to be all over fantasy football scout in 6 months when he's got 170 points or something.
Playing at right wing because we've no wingers.
Yeah, you've got no wingers. Plays Bardsley right wing. I love that.
Unbelievable. Your running isn't too bad, and I kind of say, look, if you get to game week 27-28, you're still in and around bottom three, which no one expects probably Burnley to be, but it's that kind of running where when you need to pull out results, you can. And I think you did it kind of around Christmas time last year where you were flirting around, just get a string of results together, pull away, give yourself that breathing space. So even towards the end of the season, you feel like if you're in and about it and you need to put together 3 or 4 results in a row, there's a good 10 to 12 fixtures where you can do that there.
Yeah, I think that's the thing with how stable we've been under Dyche, although we haven't spent much, you know, the core of the team's still there. It's obviously the same manager, the same setup. So even if we do have a shaky start, you know, Dyche does have those where he gets the players going and we just have a good run and pick up. I think we was on the podcast probably, like you said, just after Christmas, and I was shitting bricks and James was just saying, not a chance. Like, you'll be absolutely fine.
Be patient.
Yeah. Obviously, I trust Dice to do it, but it still doesn't. You still get nervous when you're looking over your shoulder. But yeah, the running definitely is. You know, I think it's like Newcastle, Villa, Watford, Wolves, West Ham, Norwich. So if we're looking for points out of those final games, you'd expect us to.
I'd back you to get them more often than not, for sure.
I was looking before that, right? Game week 30, blank game week because of the FA Cup quarterfinal. He's got Southampton at home. The three away games before that. Brighton, Crystal Palace and Brentford. They're all 0-0, weren't they? Steaming into Burnley defensive for game week 26.
Yeah.
Ahead of the blank game week when you probably get beat 4-1 at home by Southampton. You know exactly how this works. Yeah, it is a decent running. I think, I'd spoke to you a lot that period, Jack, that I thought you were fine. You'd had such a difficult start. And the one thing you maintained, you spoke to us just before you played us, when Ricky Saunders come on a COTC, you shouldn't have lost that night, was the impact of obviously me coming back meant Tarkowski playing in the right position. And it just solved the problem because Tarkowski was playing out of position as well. So you had someone to cover for Tarkowski and Tarkowski covering for me. It just didn't really work. And I always felt that I could see the signs that you were going to be all right. And most of us feel like that. Like this year, predicting who will go down is so tough. We've been through teams, you go, Palace, I don't know, it could be all right. Good new signings. Newcastle, the way to finish the season. Brighton will be better. And then we get to Burnley and we just go, no. And then you start looking around going, well, somebody
even though even though the kit man and the cleaner's playing at right wing.
But that's just how we feel about you. But someone this year is going to go who's definitely not expecting to.
Yeah, the worry is that, you know, there's been rumours that Dyche has been close to penning a new contract and that's still not come through. So whether there's been something there from the takeover or whether there's, you know, they can't agree on a wage or whether he's waiting to see whether he gets money to spend, I don't know. But from what it sounded like earlier on towards the back end of last season was that he was going to sit down and have contract talks. Early in the summer, it was like, oh yeah, he sat down with them and we've just not heard anything. So that is a worry because, you know, without Dyche, you know, we're talking
a different game, yeah.
Yeah,
it doesn't mean that someone else couldn't come in and maybe even do better, but it'd be bloody unlikely, I think.
I think they would do. I think short term they'd do better, but then I think once we hit that, you know, period where we have a tough period, there'd be no way back.
And it's not 8 or 9 months in now with the new owners and what have you. How do the fans generally feel with everything that's happened since they've taken over?
I seem to be in the minority at the start because everyone else was excited, but I was saying, well, financially we're worse off because we have these loan repayments to do. I was like, he's not from Burnley like our previous ones. So, you know, straight away, even if you can try and connect and understand the town, it's not quite the same. I'm a little bit miffed off that we've not signed anybody. Obviously we've signed Collins and Hennessy, but you know, no real statement signings where if you came in and took over a club, you want to say, right, that's it, I'm going to go and spend £20 million. Or, you know, I'm not saying that we go and just buy someone for the sake of it, but, you know, we've not invested for years now. You know, Dyche deserves to have a pick of a winger. You know, he was after Harry Wilson last year. You know, he's just gone for £12 million. If we were after him last year, is that not something we could have, you know, sort of looked at? I would have had Townsend on a free. Like, you know, it's just disappointing considering we've had all summer and we didn't sign anyone in January when he said there was funds available. So they keep saying there's funds available, but it's just we're not getting bodies through the door, which...
Yeah, it was the one thing we said when we did the pod on Patreon, didn't we? So we kind of said, we'll know come September, probably we're at in terms of... Because you don't know, they might be working on a lot of deals in the background. There was rumours of their, because they work in software and stuff, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, you need to check the Scout app or whatever, AI Scout or whatever, and that'll tell you who they're going to sign.
There was a little bit of kind of thinking, well, are they going to unearth gems like what Brentford have, but that are slightly higher level, obviously doing it immediately in the Premier League. And I guess until the window shuts, we don't know, right? You might suddenly be thinking, you might buy a 5 million winger from Poland and it might be like, well, what's that going to do? And he might be the dog's bollocks, mate.
If they were doing it for the AI Scout, I don't know why they didn't just go and buy a club, you know, a quarter of the price in the Championship or sort of like League One. Because if you're going to find gems on a bloody scouting app, they ain't going to be, you'd have to be really lucky to find someone who's not managed to get a trial or something at a decent club and make his way into professional football.
But then in your case, in terms of how you compete in the transfer market, you're not actually competing with other Premier League clubs. You actually are probably more competing with the Fulhams and West Broms and the like in terms of what's affordable for you and stuff. So, you know, if you'd gone a bid 12 million for Harry Wilson, this kind of bidding war we're talking about here, right? So actually there's a case to be made that you might be looking at certain players that other clubs in the Premier League might not. We just don't know if it's happening or not.
And I
don't think we will for 6 weeks or so. When that window shuts and you're bottom of the league after game week six, A, don't shit yourself because you've got the right manager, but B, we'll probably know if the owners were serious or not.
Yeah, I get that. But I think the worry with us is Dyche is too rigid, so he wouldn't just have a nice young player who's, you know, a little bit like Saint-Maximin. If he came to Burnley, he'd be on the bench most of the time, you know, unless there was a space for him. He just isn't the sort of Dyche type of player. He'd much rather have someone a little bit more rigid who he can use properly. So my point with the AI scalp is Dyche is going to be too naive to want to bring in a hidden gem. He'd rather go and sign someone who's 32 years old from Stoke and stick them in the side. Like, I just don't see the AR scout being a solution for someone like us.
What Jack's saying is the way this is going to end for Sean Dyche at Burnley is clash over transfers.
Yep. Potentially. I can see that.
I can as well.
Don't
end the pod like that. He's going to go and be straight down the pub 12 pints later.
Oh, dear. We shall see.
West Ham don't need a manager at the moment, Jack. That's one you ain't got to worry about. No, I think the Palace job, a few of us were thinking, but
it's weird because every time I sort of don't get too worried because you think he's going to come in for him.
I read that he wasn't interested in the Palace job rather than they weren't interested in, which is interesting.
Yeah, I think if I was Dyche, I'd have been wanting the Everton job. I'd have been driving over there and knocking on the door and saying, if I'm getting a better Premier League side, I'd want someone like an Everton.
The problem is, as we discussed before, if he goes to Everton, what Everton fans are going to make of that?
Well, they threatened to burn Rafa's house down anyway, didn't they? So they didn't like Rafa, so...
True.
That's true. Yeah. Jack, thank you so much for joining us and giving us the rundown on Burnley. Do you want to tell the listeners, if they don't already know, where they can find you on socials and what have you?
Yeah, so my name's Jack and my Twitter handle is @TurfyTopper.
Mobile phone number?
I don't get much coming through on that.
No, we have a few correspondents who would probably say it out loud, particularly the ones looking at Paul. Jack's young enough, he doesn't need to worry about that. Always a pleasure, mate. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, gents.
James, we are moving on to your club next. Do you want to tell the listeners who's coming on for the next episode of Correspondent Week?
Ricky Saunders, I'll get my white shirt on. We're talking Tottenham. We're talking business. I don't know what business we're talking about, though, because I think this could be a very long month for Tottenham in the transfer window, but we'll do our best.
Indeed, we will. So stay tuned. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast wherever you are listening. We've still got 16 to go with Correspondent Week. And as James said, Tottenham coming up next. Stay safe. Ciao for now.
Thanks, Jack. Cue music, please, man child.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.